Good afternoon. It's Friday the 18th of May 2018, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. I'm your host, Mike Robinson. Joining me in the studio today, Patrick Henningsen from 21st Century Wire. Welcome to the programme, Patrick.
Great to be with you, Mike.
Also joining us via video link is David Scott from Northern Exposure. So we'll have David on very, very shortly. But we're going to get straight on here, Patrick, with North Korea. And, well, it all looked like it was going swimmingly. There's going to be a summit with Trump. And then suddenly the summit's potentially cancelled, and all because of apparently John Bolton and his view that North Korea really needs the Libya treatment. Mm-hmm. Bolton suggested that the nuclear program, the deal over the nuclear program in Libya that was done with Gaddafi in 2003, there should be a similar deal for North Korea. The North Koreans objected to it somewhat. Let's just have a look at what they said. They said, we've already stated our intention for denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula and made clear on several occasions that preconditions for denuclearization is put to an end, is to put an end to anti-DPRK hostile policy and nuclear threats and blackmail of the United States. They said that they had taken a very important and broad-minded steps for peace and stability in the Korean Peninsula and the world. They said we shed light on the quality of Bolton. So they were particularly focused on him and his input on this. We shed light on the quality of Bolton already in the past, and we do not hide our feeling of repugnance towards him. Pretty strong language. And then they went on to say, if President Trump follows in the footsteps of his predecessors, he will be recorded as more tragic and unsuccessful president than his predecessors, far from his initial ambition to make unprecedented success. So that's their opinion. And the question is Trump following in the footsteps? Well, it's a bit unclear because in the presence of Bolton, then he went on to say that the Libyan model isn't a model, is not a model that we have at all when we're thinking of North Korea. So again, Patrick, we see this schizophrenia in the Trump administration. And so, you know, what are your thoughts on what's going on? Is this a case of Bolton speaking out of turn on his own and then Trump having to wind back from that because Bolton really doesn't want a deal done with North Korea? Is that what's going on?
I think you're partially right, Mike. There's two parts with this, two answers to your question. One is John Bolton is playing the role. He's trying to instigate the Israeli negotiation technique, which is to insert caveats into any negotiations that make it absolutely untenable as a deal going forward for one side or the other. So this is in order to sabotage the negotiations. That's one aspect to what John Bolton is attempting to do. The other thing is this isn't about North Korea. The most important piece on this administration's chessboard, if you look across recent events and across its cabinet and the fact that John Bolton itself is more or less a proxy appointment by Sheldon Adelson and people like Paul Singer, billionaires who bankrolled the Trump campaign, who are absolutely behind this White House and most every member of the Senate and the Congress.
So you're saying that Trump's effectively been blackmailed into putting Bolton in place, certainly some big financial pressure being put on?
I'm sure he was told to put Bolton into place. So this isn't about North Korea. This is about Iran. Because whatever the structure of this deal with North Korea is, Mike, most likely this will set a precedent for whatever sort of negotiations are going to be presented towards Iran, whatever sort of ultimatums are going to be presented to Tehran for their alleged violation of the nuclear deal, according to this administration. So what they're trying to do is set a precedent here. And so the Libyan negotiation model, Mike, as was pointed out, that would be a bad deal for both North Korea and for Tehran. Because look what happened to Libya. I think it doesn't take a genius to see the potential to renege once again on that deal. So bottom line, Mike, the United States has no credibility as an honest broker, not after dumping the JCPOA.
David, have you any thoughts on this?
I'm just astounded that North Korea, the most repressive regime on the planet, military and cruel beyond measure to its own people, has actually been made to look good by John Bolton. I didn't think it was possible.
Well, there you go. Okay, let's move on to Rand Paul then, because he has been expressing concerns about what the CIA's role was up to the presidential election. So he, a couple of days ago, wrote a letter to acting CIA director Gina Haspel, and he demanded to know whether the CIA had conducted surveillance during the 2016 presidential campaign of any of the candidates, including himself, and obviously Donald Trump as well. He wants to know the circumstances under which the CIA would trail, monitor, or otherwise conduct information on the communications and movements of US presidential candidates. And he asks whether you or anyone else at the CIA ever cooperated with any foreign intelligence services to surveil, monitor, or collect communications information about Donald Trump over the past 5 years, including when he was traveling to Europe and when he was in the UK in November 2016. And then he went on to Fox News subsequently and said that the fact that Haspel is a close acolyte of former CIA Director John Brennan, who's obviously violently against the Trump at the moment. He said, I think we should know what she knows about whether the Trump campaign was surveilled upon and why was the CIA involved. So he seems to be pretty clear that the CIA was involved, and he clearly wants to know more, Pat.
Well, the evidence suggests that Rand Paul is pursuing a real line of inquiry there, not just the CIA, but also the FBI. So again, various agencies within the U.S. federal government involved in things like unmasking, as was admitted by Susan Rice, who was Obama's national security advisor, and also the CIA and the FBI, similar sort of things going on there, surveilling the Trump campaign and who knows other campaign members as well of the GOP field during the primary stages anyway. So I think that's a legitimate inquiry. So good point, Mike. He probably wouldn't be asking if he didn't know that there was already something there.
Yeah. Now let's move on to Israel and Gaza. And really, this is some of the response to what happened there, because somebody pushed this out on Facebook. We'll come on to who it was in a second. Somebody pushed this out on Facebook, and it seemed to have gone viral. Of course, this video showing people under shrouds, and then one of the shrouds moves. And let's just have a look at who had pushed this out, some guy called Ian Boyle. But as you can see, it really ended up with, what's that, 881,000 views or so? Is that
what I'm writing? Something like that, yeah.
And 31,000 shares. And then it was picked up by somebody on Facebook calling themselves President Trump fans, and it got another 181,000 views, 182,000 views, another 10,000 shares. So this clearly went viral.
But read the caption. So President Trump fans describes this video as when you really badly want to pretend to be dead so you can blame America and Israel for your that your nose keeps itching. And this similar thing was said by was said by Ian Boyle.
Yeah.
When you are a dead Palestinian martyr, but your nose keeps twitching. So both of these people on social media, Mike, have claiming that this is a fake Hamas or a fake Palestinian death video designed to blame Israel, and they've got over a million views or something on social media, and loads of engagement here, right?
Right, but a 10-minute search, Patrick, seems to have demonstrate that it wasn't any such thing. So here is the video, and we'll see, this is the original video. We'll see that it is the same video in 1 second. You can see it's got the same caption at the bottom, and we'll see the same movement here. So that's clearly the same video, but unfortunately, that was published in 2013.
That is 2013. So that's from this Egyptian television network. This is not a funeral in 2013. This is a student demonstration in the city of Azar, I believe, in Egypt. I sent we have the information earlier. So this was a Muslim, supposedly sympathetic towards the Muslim Brotherhood, against Egyptian police brutality, state oppression, etc. So this isn't a funeral. This is a kind of a performance art type thing. You can tell it's not a funeral because all of the victims are wearing shoes and their feet aren't bound by Muslim burial tradition. So clearly it's not a funeral. So this was easy to find, Mike, that this was the original video here. But yet in the wake of the Gaza massacre. This is being used by this person, Ian Boyle, who probably maybe doesn't know any better. We'll give him the benefit of the doubt, but he is certainly lapping up the praise here, saying how great he's done. 700,000 views, and what great work I've done. Honestly, I expected more hate, but there's been so very little, and so much love and support has been off the charts. Thank you, everybody, he says, for putting out basically a fake, false narrative on social media and going viral.
Well,
basically,
let's look at some of the love and support. So Carl Huffman's response to the video was napalm and an axe.
Right.
Delightful. Mark McCallum said, shoot that one that's still kicking. Jojo Durham said, good for President Trump. Michael Shelton said,
shoot him again.
Yeah, basically.
LOL, ha ha ha. So you put out a video, you put a fake narrative with it, whether you're Ian Boyle or President Trump fans, and that goes viral. And these are the comments, Mike, that it generates, which is kill the Palestinian, use napalm, use an axe, shoot him. He's not dead yet, shoot him anyway. So the sort of the hate that it generates. So these people are profiting off it, and they're generating hate against Palestinians based on what is effectively a lie that they put out. So this is the world we live in, Mike.
Now, in the chat box, they're saying, who is Ian Boyle? And, of course, that doesn't really matter in a sense, because the point here is that here is somebody pushing forward a narrative, and suddenly it has spread, burst across Facebook, and has had nearly a million views. Somebody presenting the opposite narrative isn't getting the same response.
No,
and is that any more than people don't agree with the alternative narrative, or is it that Facebook is censoring the alternative narrative?
Well, all I can say is that I'm getting throttled on Facebook for sharing content, being throttled, being funneled, being ghost banned, and something like this, which is a total fabrication, which demonizes Palestinians, goes viral like nothing that anyone's ever seen before. I'm only asking the question, does Facebook have a bias against certain types of content or certain types of fake, what they call fake news, but they allow actual fake news that elicits violent reactions to go off the charts without any checks and balances whatsoever? Or are there so many people that are just so stupid on social media that they couldn't tell the difference anyway? I confess, Mike, it took me 10 minutes to debunk this morning. So I had to invest 10 minutes of my day into debunking this video, which is a big investment, but I know people are busy out there, so not everyone has the time.
David, what are your thoughts on where we're at the moment with regard to the way news is being pushed around? Have you got yourself muted?
My mistake, sorry about that. Yes, it's getting even less reliable. We're seeing fake news from official sources more and more. Essentially, all the main themes seem to be fake now. The Russian collusion Trump story, the constant demonization of Russia, the constant claim that Russia is manipulating everything in the West. I mean, none of this holds water. None of it's sound. So if you take away the fake stories from the mainstream media, well, there's not an awful lot left. All the big stories are either fake or so heavily spun as to be unreliable.
Yeah. Yes, but the celebration didn't end there, Patrick.
No, here's Laura Loomer. So she is an absolute, very vocal supporter of Israel and America. And her tweet as a response to the Palestinian, the massacre of the Palestinians by the IDF is 58-0. So she kind of viewed this like a rugby match. Israel is up 58-0, 58 dead Palestinians. And so she's sort of gloating there, doing a victory lap. Kind of disturbing, Mike, but this is the sort of political atmosphere that we've got at the moment. And effectively, the Trump train has effectively bound together with the kind of the Zionist Israeli propaganda machine. And this is what you get. So it's—I don't know where this is going to go, Mike, but it's certainly going to be interesting.
Now, as a result of our coverage of what happened in Gaza, certainly we received quite a few supportive messages from people for our coverage of it. But we also received some messages criticizing and suggesting that we were propagandizing for the Palestinians and being anti-Israeli and so on. Well, at this point in time, at least, we're still able to do that, have that discussion, Patrick. But it seems that in the United States and in South Carolina, that perhaps moves are heading in a direction where it would be, in fact, impossible to criticize Israel.
Correct, Mike. So this is from the South Carolina State Legislature. So this was an education bill. This is a funding bill for public education institutions. We're talking about colleges and universities mainly. So if you scroll down on the bill, in the lower section on this page, hopefully we'll put a link on the show notes on the UK Columns YouTube channel there. But if you scroll down, and you'll find that they're now the state is mandating this definition of anti-Semitism, basically. So this includes any criticism of the state of Israel is included in this 12-bullet point definition, which is to be printed and then distributed to all higher education and public education institutions in the state of California, mandated by the state. It's inserted in this budget item. Now, they've tried to do this in the past, but it hasn't been successful. So they, as they do in America, they tucked it into a piece of legislation here. So it's not a law, per se, as some have reported it in certain media outlets. It's not a law that makes criticism of Israel illegal. What it is it's the state putting forth a definition of anti-Semitism that includes literally any criticism of the state of Israel, and many, many caveats that are similar to that within this 12-bullet point definition, which covers everything, including criticism of non-Jews, or you could even extend this to non-Jewish supporters of Israel are also included in this this definition by the state, Mike. So this is one step closer to making it illegal to criticize the policies or actions of the state of Israel.
David, where does this take us if we get to the point where criticizing a national government is considered a hate crime? This seems like a pretty incredible position to be in.
It is, but it's also the position of the British campaign against anti-Semitism. Those were the people who shut down David Icke and who have been at the forefront of the controversy over the Labour Party. Their definition is almost identical, and you can't really criticise Israel without falling under anti-Semite under their definition, which is utterly nonsensical. But that's the way it's going, and this is obviously to close down free speech, close down criticism, and criminalise legitimate consent.
Right, let's move on to defence then. And our illustrious Defence Secretary Gavin Williamson was meeting his French counterpart yesterday, so they have pulled off another one, Patrick, another joint. Do we call it a treaty? I don't think so, because there's no ratification. It's a joint communique, a joint arrangement. So it's part of this regular forum that they now have for discussion of UK-France defence cooperation. And what they've decided to do is that they will formalise an exchange, effectively enabling French pilots to train in the UK Empire Test Pilots School, based at Boscombe Down, British pilots are going to train at the French Test Pilot School, the École du Personnel Navigant d'Essai in France. I'm not quite sure exactly where it is in France, according to this press release. But anyway, the reciprocal exchange, they say, of personnel ensures that the skills of military flight test analysis and capability enhancements are shared between the armed forces of the UK and France, further strengthening the UK's relationship with France and building on the strong partnership between our armed forces. Now, there's a number of points here. First of all, why would we be swapping test pilots? This is in order to make sure that British pilots have skills on French gear, French pilots have skills on British gear, because we are merging the two militaries into a single force at the moment. This is increasingly obvious. The other issue is that here is that this once again is another agreement with the French, which has had no parliamentary scrutiny whatsoever. It's hardly getting mentioned in the press. MPs aren't talking about it. There's no ratification of these agreements in the parliament. And this is a pretty staggering situation as far as I'm concerned, where a national government is plowing ahead with international policy without any scrutiny or any accountability to the national parliament.
Is it worse than that, Mike? You've got a fireplace salesman doing the deal.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, I don't see any evidence of a spider on the desk. So she wasn't scared into signing these documents. His tarantula isn't there. So clearly the French and the British absolutely keen to go ahead with this. Williamson said, France is one of our most important allies, and this agreement symbolizes the importance of deep defense and security relationships. By participating in this exchange program, we will strengthen understanding between our personnel. And the question is, why would we need to, unless we are, in fact, going to end up in joint operations increasingly?
Sure. And you could say, Mike, that the Britain has inferior fighter craft than what the France currently have in rolling stock. Vice versa, the French might say the same thing. So there's no compatibility, per se, between the two armed forces as hardware. But what you're talking about, Mike, is about the future, where there will be total interoperability, right?
Yes, I'm talking about that. But, David, I'm also talking about, because this issue, everybody's focused on so-called Henry VIII powers over Brexit and the EU withdrawal bill. But the fact of the matter is that this government is behaving like a totalitarian regime and has been since 2010 when they signed the Lancaster House treaties. And nobody seems to be asking any questions about this.
No questions, no opposition. It's also very, very reminiscent of years ago, and just over 100 years ago, the run-up to the First World War, where there were arrangements made and commitments made behind the scenes, not discussed in Parliament, not known to most MPs, certainly not known to the public. And it got us into a situation which was horrendous beyond belief, and which no one had really thought through before we marched in. And it was all done behind the scenes. It was all done with covert agreements with the French and guarantees given to the French that were never publicised. I just wonder what's really going on at the back of this. It seems to be a rerun. The study of the run-up to World War One used to be dry ancient history. You look back on it now, it starts to look like current events.
This is a very astute and worrying comment, Pat.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Let's move on to Skripal then. Sergei Skripal has been discharged from hospital, according to many mainstream media. We went and had a look at what RT had to say about this.
Sure. So Sergei Skripal, apparently, we're told, this is a statement by Lorna Wilkinson, director of nursing at the hospital. She's the apparently the spokesperson for the Skripals from the NHS. So she says, we have been able to discharge Sergei Skripal. This is an important stage in his recovery, which will now take place away from the hospital. So effectively, Mr. Skripal is an outpatient right now. So she continues treating him. And the other two people poisoned by this nerve agent while still providing outstanding care to the other patients, great, who rely on our hospital, has been a huge, unprecedented challenge that I'm proud of, and I'm proud of our staff at the Salisbury Hospital. They've risen to that challenge, she said. So this is Cara Charles Barks. It is fantastic that about the news that Sergei Skripal is well enough to leave the district hospital, that he and Yulia and Detective Sergeant Bailey have been able to leave us so soon after coming in contact with this nerve agent, again, nerve agent, is thanks to the hard work, skill, and professionalism of our clinicians who provide outstanding care to all patients day in and day out. And they go on saying that they've demonstrated the very best of the NHS, a special tribute to our staff. So they managed to spin this into a great NHS success story. So the only problem, Mike, is when this story broke, we were told that Novichok was 10 times more deadly than VX nerve gas, the deadliest nerve agent known to man, in fact. And now we're told that, well, it's a nerve agent, but it's not deadly. And we're told that he came in contact with it. They both came in contact on the doorknob, correct me if I'm wrong, of the Skripal's semi-detached two-up, one-down flat in Salisbury. And so there's a time release now with the Novichok as well. So you don't, it doesn't affect you straight away, Mike. It takes 3 or 4 hours in this slow time release. Must have been the special gel that was applied to the door handle by Vladimir Putin. And so again, this is the magic bullet now of this story. So it's the time released, not so deadly, Novichok, maybe Novichok nerve agent. So we just can take their word for it. So 5 weeks, Mike, where's Yulia Skripal? Should we issue a missing persons report?
We absolutely should. But, of course, Sergei is now probably in the same hands as Yulia. So we don't know where Yulia is. Sergei's no longer in the hospital. We don't know where he is.
There's no pictures of him leaving the hospital. No. There's no press conference so they can show the public, hey, Sergei's okay. Hey, Yulia's okay. We only have to take the media's word for it.
Was he even in the hospital in the first place? We don't know.
We don't know for sure. All we know is what the media, mainstream media, have told us and what certain administrators or government officials have said. That's all we know.
Look, Ned Pamphilon produced this artwork a few days ago. UK column news, another day in Novichok land. This is pretty much where we're at. And of course, the BBC had published that day that baby wipes were to be banned. Well, I think the last lot of baby wipes probably had been used in the hospital to clean this Novichok off Mr. Skripal. So maybe they've run out by this stage. Maybe that's why they've left him to leave. But
is that what the government said, Mike, that you should use baby wipes if you think you might have been in contact with the Novichok? Isn't
that was the advice from Public Health England, I believe.
Yes.
So, you know, this is where we're at. This we've said it several times before, but this story doesn't stack up from beginning to end. The mainstream media and politicians get very upset when people say that and accuse us of conspiracy theory and so on. But there is no credibility in this story at all. And I think it's really important now to keep asking the question, where are the Skripals? The mainstream press today saying that Mr. Skripal and his daughter would end up in witness protection. But of course, what that means is that they effectively disappear. I find that a very worrying development.
Can you go back to Ned's masterpiece here? Ned, the second coming of Ralph Steadman, if you're listening. Look under the bench, Mike, and what is crumpled up under that bench? It's a D notice for Pablo Miller. So, and this is another thing we've learned from the Novichok story, is the mainstream journalists and media professionals have admitted that, you know, the power of the D notice, as it were. So if one thing positive came out of this story, it's that more people are aware of this sort of control over the mainstream press of what they can and can't report according to the dictates of the government.
David, this couldn't happen in Scotland, could it?
What? Lying governments? Oh, no.
No, people just disappearing. That's what I had in mind.
Oh, that happens, yes. Don't worry, the Police Scotland have it covered. You see, in Scotland, all murders are solved, right? And we get this by two means. One, a lot of murders are not defined as murders. And they've changed the definition of solved, because if Police Scotland decide they know who did it, then it's solved. We don't actually need to have a conviction to have it solved.
Ah, right, okay. Well, that's maybe what's going on here, Patrick. Certainly, we good. Clearly don't have to have a conviction in the poisoning of the Skripals to know that the situation's solved, because it was clearly Vladimir Putin.
So as David pointed out, north of the border, as is south of the border, no due process is required.
Absolutely.
So let's forget about the judicial process and transparency and all those outdated concepts.
Okay, let's move on. A reminder that Media on Trial is taking place in Leeds on the 27th of May. That's not too long to go now. There are not too many tickets left, so if you want to get along to that, please get your tickets. Tickets available at mediaontrial.uk. Now, you're going to be speaking at that.
I'm told I am.
Yes.
I'm told I am.
Excellent.
All the controversial speakers will be there.
All the controversial speakers, yes, indeed. Now, let's move on to the Irish Red Cross, because this was sent to me a couple of days ago. They have put up a website here which says, put empty space to better use. Your vacant property or spare room could change your life. Pledge today. So what's this all about? Well, basically, they're wanting people with spare rooms to take in refugees from Syria, right? Or if you've got a vacant property, refugees from Syria can go in there and so on. Now, I have been following this issue of refugees coming into the UK for quite some time, particularly interested in what happens to unaccompanied children, because as we've reported many times, unaccompanied children tend to go missing when they come to the UK. So I wrote to the Irish Red Cross and I said, look, here in the UK, we've evidence that Syrian refugees, including unaccompanied children, have gone missing following arrival in the UK, many of them ending up in so-called modern slavery, including in the sex trade. I would like to ask, therefore, what protections you have in place to avoid the same happening in Ireland? Because the thing that struck me about what's happening here in the UK is that children are arriving in this country, they're going into their care system, they're going out the other side of the care system, and they're ending up as being sex trafficked. And there seem to be no protections in place to follow these children once they are in the care system and to make sure that they are safe. And I ask the question, you know, is bringing them into the UK any better for them than the situation that they're in as unaccompanied children in other places? So that's the question I asked. And this is the response that I got. The Irish Red Cross is working under a structured program run by the Department of Justice and Equality called the Irish Refugee Protection Program. The Irish Red Cross has been assigned to work with a particular group of refugees by the Department of Justice, and this group does not include unaccompanied minors. Your query should be directed to the Department of Justice and Equality. Now, I have a number of issues with this statement, and I'm going to try to explain the two main ones. The first one is this issue that this group does not include unaccompanied minors. But if we look at their website, all we see is images of individual children. Mm. Okay, so there's the top half of the website. Here's the bottom half of the website.
More children.
More children. Now, okay, in the top half of the website, the child has a couple of people in the background, but that's not the point. But then,
by the way, Mike, that is such an evocative, provocative image there. It's like a scared, intimidated kid. I mean, they're trying to elicit an emotional response, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. So my first point is that this advertising campaign is utterly cynical, right?
It's exploitative, actually. I'll take it a bit further. You will, too.
Yep.
It's exploiting children.
Okay, now let's look at the text. Sorry, I've done that wrong. Let's look at the text. We'll go back up here. And it says, if a match is made, with your permission, we'll arrange a preliminary meeting with you, the refugee, and a caseworker. It doesn't say with you, the refugees, and a caseworker. Mm-hmm. So they're saying we're not working with unaccompanied children, but we're talking about a single refugee, and the images they have on the website are of children. So if it's an individual child, then it's unaccompanied, is it not? So there's something not right about this statement that they've given. You read through all those points on the pledge of vacant property, pledge of room thing, and it's all about a refugee, right? The second point here is, if we refer back to their statement, they said, it's not our, I'm paraphrasing, it's not our problem, Gov, ask the Irish government, right? And I find this very, very disturbing, because what they're doing is that they're using their reputation as a world-renowned NGO in these areas, the Red Cross, to front a government program.
They're doing the front-end marketing
for this government program, and then they're taking no responsibility for their actions. And I find that pretty despicable. David, I find it despicable. I can't put it any other way. But the British Red Cross has some significant questions to answer here. They haven't answered my follow-up question yet. And in fact, I haven't even had a response from them that they intend to answer my follow-up question. But what are your thoughts on this?
This is what we see. This is what we see in the named person case. The government is using the charities to deliver their policies. They're using this because charities put people to sleep. Charities have a good reputation. and the government doesn't. So they're purchasing the charity's loyalty with cash, and they're purchasing the charity's reputation with more cash, and they're using it to deliver government programs. But these charities are now wholly owned subsidiaries of the state. There is no separation, there's no control of information flow, there's certainly no sign of the what used to be present in non-governmental organizations, which was the ability to push back against government if it crossed the line. That's gone. And what we see here is cooperation with the government. And then when the going gets sticky, well, you take it somewhere else. It's not us. And that's another element to this. Who is to blame? You never know who's to blame. There's no accountability. There's no responsibility.
Well, this is a very good point, Patrick, and I just refer people back to yesterday's UK Column News, because I was talking about a speech that Matt Hancock had given, where he was basically saying that the civil society sector, the charity sector, well, you can criticise the government, but only if you do it in an appropriate way. And by the way, we provide you with a lot of your funding. Mm-hmm. And this is a pretty dangerous position to be in.
What you just showed there from the Red Cross, Mike, that is rife for abuse right there. I mean, talking about placing people, this is like a kind of unofficial foster care system, maybe with less rigorous in terms of administrative protocols and so forth. But let's talk very quickly. I know you want to move on, but I just want to say all this business about the refugees, they're still promoting this issue very heavily, especially in the UK, countries like Canada. It's actually a top front and center issue. Syrian refugees, we need to help the children. All of these children's charities dealing with refugees. Okay, the policies of our government, the policies of EU states, the policies of the US and Canada, NATO member states, they're putting punitive sanctions still on Syria, destroying the economy, devaluing the currency. The United States is occupying Syria's oil region to make sure they have no income to make balance of payments for social services. There's high unemployment. Industries have all collapsed. We're providing arms to the opposition, and we're injecting cash, this government and the U.S. government, injecting large amounts, hundreds of millions of dollars in cash into opposition-held areas to undermine the stability of the country. The policies of our governments are causing the refugee crisis. They're creating Syrian refugees. The only reason these people are not going back is because, A, their home's not suitable to go back to, or there's no economic opportunities, and the economy's collapsed. Those are direct results of the policies of our government. So at some point, people need to wake up and smell the coffee that we are creating the situation that is driving the migrant crisis. It's beyond a doubt now.
Okay, David, let's move on to the next Fresh Start Foundation event.
Yes, this is the week Saturday. It's Kirkcaldy, Saturday, 26th of May. Our speaker there is John Shields. Now John, his son was abused in a Church of Scotland care home. He managed to rescue him from that, and only to find himself targeted by the local authority and by the authorities in general. His story is incredible, but true. He speaks extremely well, and I hope a lot of people will come along and hear him and give him support. It's going to be extremely insightful. I've heard John speak before. It's first class, and it really shows how the system operates.
Now, the Fresh Start Foundation, David, has been coming under attack from the group of people that are suggesting that the Hampstead child abuse, the satanic ritual abuse case is fake. What's been going on?
Well, we don't spend a lot of time watching what they do, but every time we kind of catch sight of it, they seem to be rather obsessing about us. Yes, the Hampstead or Hoaxstead, as they call it, team, who have dedicated their lives, it would appear, to proving that the Hampstead kids were not telling the truth. They've decided that they don't like us very much. I think it's something about the fact that we talk about Satan's ritual abuse. So they've started a web blog, Shiva Burton. Now, Shiva Burton claims to be a supporter of a campaigner for child sexual abuse victims. All we can ever see her doing is attacking victims. She started a blog entitled The Real Fresh Start Foundation, so that she's trying to, I don't know, some sort of commentary about us. But the first page of this was rambling stuff about other issues completely. So they don't seem to have very much to go on. But it did prompt us to have a little look at what they're up to and who's involved. So there's a couple of screenshots here. This is from the Shiva Burton blog was advertised by a user called El Coyote, who is one of the Hoekstead team. And this is his user stats from Twitter. And you see the people that he's interacting with. Common Porpoise, that's probably Dearman. James Hind. Now, James Hind is a self-confessed independent Satanist. So it's very strange that the organization that claims to be denying that there was any satanic ritual abuse is surrounded by Satanists the whole time. And whenever you dig into them, there's a screenshot here from James Hind's blog. That's not his real name, incidentally. Whenever you look at this, then you can't move for Satanists, which is a very strange coincidence. If you look at this next one here, you then see El Coyote here linked with Shatter Boys as well. So you see the people who are doing the attacking are communicating with one another quite a lot and form this strange little band. But it is a strange band because you've got people who claim to be representing child abuse survivors and a lot of Satanists. Faustian pact there referenced in his name. So this is interesting. We see what's attacking us, and although it's not something we spend a lot of time on, it sort of revealed the structure of the opposition to child abuse survivors, and that's been very interesting. And one more page there that you maybe could put up, just that last slide there.
This one here.
Well, yes, this is just to show there's 10 cases here of convictions for SRA. This is on Wildcat's blog. And I recommend people having a look at that. The cases are very, very explicit. And there's absolutely no doubt that Satanist ritual abuse is real, because it's been through the courts in the UK. People have been convicted and have been sent down for it. In this final thing before we leave this subject, this next slide here, we were being questioned and attacked by some of the Satanists over data handling processes. And then we received a present. This is the files that the Hoekstead blog, here Scarlet Scoop you see here, is keeping on anyone who supports the Hampstead kids. Right? They're gathering information, it's all filed in per person. And they're gathering information on the individuals that support the Hampstead kids and on everything they put out on social media relevant to that case.
There's thousands of hours. What kind of depth are we looking at here, David? What have they got?
Well, it's a lot of screenshots of comments and social media that people have put out. And there's some personal information in there as well. But that's the nature of the research they're doing on anyone who supports the children. Now, there's 68 names there, and I just wonder if those 68 people know that information is being gathered on them and their social media output is being monitored by this group in Hampstead. It's very strange indeed.
Indeed. Okay, well, look, we're just about out of time, but Alex Thompson wanted me to draw people's or ask people for help on an issue over the Hofschor case, and that is this: they have a psychiatrist's opinion on Mr. Hofschor from this lady here, Dr. Elizabeth Gethins, who used to work at Signet, but unfortunately she has left that job in the last 2 or 3 weeks, and they're struggling to get contact details for her. So Alex has asked that if anybody that's watching this program is aware of where Dr. Elizabeth Gethins is now working, that perhaps you could get in touch with some contact details, because they need her help with the report that she has written. So if anybody can get in touch about that, please do. David, we're absolutely right out of time, but there are a couple of stories here that we will cover the next time you're on, if that's okay. But just in closing, you know, how are things in Scotland? And I hear rumours that Alex Salmond may make a reappearance in the not too distant future if there's a second independence referendum.
He's threatened this. Yes. How are things in Scotland? The problem, which was revealed by one of the most intelligent of the sort of nationalist voices, who's obviously in the outer wilderness of nationalism, Jim Sillars, is that the Sturgeon regime has boxed itself into a corner and it's coming to an end. And that the problem is one of intellectual failure. There's no intellectual rigor. And I agree with that analysis. That is the core problem. And there's lots of examples of this starting to become visible. If we've got time, I'd like to explain how we know that that particular movement is failing and why. The interesting thing is why. And it's not to do with Scottish independence, yes or no. That's not the why. It's much more involved than that, but it's an interesting story.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, Patrick, for joining us today. Thank you for watching. We will be back at the same time on Monday. Have a good weekend, and we will see you then. Bye-bye.